ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। So in this topic, root of emotions, he wants to say that the root of emotion is our desire, which comes from the ignorance of our true nature. Shastras say that our original self is infinite, limitless, complete, paripurnatva. But since we do not know our original nature, we think ourselves to be this limited individual. So due to the ignorance of our true self, we think ourselves to be limited. As a result, our thoughts run from us to the world outside to fulfill this void, to fulfill this imaginary limitation. And when the thoughts run from us to the world outside, initially, this thin stream of thoughts, they are called as attachment. And when it becomes thicker, it's called desire. And once we have desires, when the desire is interrupted, you get angry. When the desire is fulfilled, you have fear of losing what you have achieved. When the desire is fulfilled, you have greed for achieving more and more. So, kama, krodha, bhaya, lobha. Then, moha comes. You get deluded with whatever you have achieved. And then, you compare yourself with those who have more than you. And you develop what is called as jealousy. Matsarya. And then with those who have less than you, you have arrogance called mada. All these are various modifications of your desires, which are the emotions, various emotions. But when the same emotions are given a direction by your buddhi, then it becomes love, kindness, charitable disposition, etc. So that becomes strength. Without the intellect guidance, it becomes a weakness. So, with the Shastric knowledge, we need to give a higher direction to our desires. So, therefore, he discussed about picking up a higher goal, something beyond your selfish, self-centered interest. In the diagram that you see there, in the book, in this topic, he talks about starting from oneself to family, to community, to humanity, to all species. So we got to, through knowledge, slowly, slowly raise ourselves from just our individual ego to the family, to community, country, humanity, all species. Thus, we need to broaden our understanding and identification. The more and more we understand about ourselves in the world, the more broader identification we will have. We will become more and more unselfish. We will develop more and more love. We rise above attachments. So therefore he says, the way to fulfill your desires is to rise above the desires. And when you rise above the desires, you spiritually evolve also. And then he says, the unrelenting law of nature is that you get what you deserve, not what you desire. You may desire many things, but you will not achieve all that unless you deserve it. For deserving, both your outer personality and inner personality has to come in one line. There has to be action in the direction without mind dissipating its energy into the result orientation or worries of the past. So the mind has to surrender to a cause which the intellect has pitched up, and the body should act in the direction. Then your act will deserve objects. So therefore, Vedanta says, you get what you deserve, not what you desire. You got to put the desires into action with a proper direction set by your buddhi. So, it is not that when we say that you have to deserve, not desire, doesn't mean that if you pray, you will get everything. But prayer will help you because it prepares the subconscious as well. So that your worries and anxieties are checked in, the subconscious is prepared, you continuously do what is right and you get the result that you deserve. And this is what he explains in this poem, Olive Tree. So please read that paragraph starting from S. Baringold drives home this message. Who will read? Every time it is either Shweta or Sandhya. So somebody else wants to try? Amiji, you read last time, right? Okay. So you can read or somebody else can read?
I can read if you wish.
Yeah, if nobody else is volunteering, then you read. Because the idea is so that everybody gets involved in reading. That's the only
okay,
idea.
So there's Rita, Madhushri, any one of them can read.
Anybody wants to read?
You read better.
Okay, you read, Hamiji.
Okay. The poem, right?
Yeah. No, before that, two paragraphs before that. As Baringold drives home, come back.
Baringold drives home this message in his beautiful poem, The Olive Tree. Two hermits planted saplings to grow olives. They needed olive oil for their prayer. One of them took charge of the plant, prayed to God for rain, for sunshine and for frost. God granted them all. Yet, his plant eventually perished, while the other hermit left the plant to God's care. Asked for nothing. It grew well and yielded abundant olives. So is it with life. Everything in this vast universe works meticulously by some mysterious power. The human intellect cannot conceive it. How the infinite beings and things orchestrate into the melody of existence. One ought not to disturb this harmony by one's personal egocentric preferences. If you choose to assert your ego, then that unknown power seems to hand over the reins of control to you. You then lose its grace. Whereas, you surrender your ego to that unknown scheme of nature, you would receive its sovereignty. The poem, The Olive Tree.
Continue.
Said an ancient hermit, bending half in prayer upon his knee, oil I need for midnight watching, I desire an olive tree. Then he took a tender sapling, planted it before his cave, spread his trembling hands above it, as his benizing he gave. But he thought, the rain it needeth, that the root may drink and swell. God, I pray thee send thy showers, so a gentle shower fell. Lord, I ask for beams of summer, cherishing this little child. Then the dripping clouds divided, and the sun looked down and smiled. Send it frost to braise its tissues, O my God, the hermit cried. Then the plant was bright and hoary, but as evensong it died. Went the hermit to a brother, sitting in his rocky cell. Thou an olive tree possessest. How is this, my brother, tell? I have planted one and prayed. Now for sunshine, now for rain. God hath granted each petition, yet my olive tree hath slain. Said the other, I entrusted it to its God, my little tree. He who made knew what it needed better than a man like me. Laid I on him no conditions, fixed no ways and means. So I wonder not my olive privet, whilst thy olive tree did die. Said in Baringold, the philosopher of America, Henry David Thoreau, enjoins, whatever we leave to God, God does and blesses us. The work we choose should be our own. God leaves alone.
See, this poem, the message conveyed through this poem has to be understood correctly. Otherwise, it could be understood wrongly as a passive surrender to some unknown divinity. So what this poem is saying is, there were two hermits. For their midnight prayers, they wanted olive oil. So they decided to plant the olive tree themselves. And both of them planted each one tree they planted. One fellow was constantly asking for rain, for sunshine, for breeze, etc. And as he asked, everything came blessed by God. When he asked for sunshine, he got sunshine. When he asked for rain, he got rain. In spite of it, his olive tree died. Whereas the other fellow's olive tree was thriving. So when he went to see what has happened to that fellow's olive tree, it was nicely growing. So he asks, how is this? He's asking, how is this, my brother tell? Mine is perished while yours is growing. So he says, I entrusted to its God my little tree. He who made it knew what it needed better than a man like me. Those two lines, if you see in the poetry, Swamiji has given it in italics. Those are important lines. He who made it knew what it needed better than a man like me. So, this has to be understood correctly, like I said. Otherwise, a lot of people take it to be some passive surrendering, you know, to some unknown divinity. Resign everything to God and just relax. Sit down. You don't have to do any work. That is not what he is trying to convey here. What the message is here is that, first of all, we have to understand that as human beings, we are a small circle and we are finite. However sharp and strong our intellect can be, it is limited. But with that limited intellect, we have to guide our mind and body to do the right action. That is our obligation that we need to do. We should not try to escape from that. But having said that, when you wake up in the morning, every day when you go to sleep, you know very well that the sun will come out again. The earth is revolving around the sun, revolving itself. So, the laws are functioning meticulously. As per actions, everybody gets the results. I am not the one who is going inside my body and digesting the food, distributing it. I am sensing the hunger. I eat. The food gets distributed, nicely digested, etc., etc. Everything happens. The system is there. Everything is taken care of. You know, there are herbivorous animals, carnivorous animals, vegetation, human beings. Everybody has been provided enough in this world. Enough oxygen, water, everything. So, with our subtle intellect, we pause it, understand that there is something beyond our intellect. What we call as unknown divinity, existence of unknown supreme divinity, which is maintaining everything according to the laws. So we call that as Ishvara, the Lord. Who is the Ishvara? Paladata. And how does he give the phalam? According to the actions rendered by everyone. Meticulously, as per everybody's action, the results come. Right? So, the role that the God plays, without fail, the divinity plays. The role that we need to play with the understanding that we are insignificant and with humility we need to execute that. When we do that, so then what happens is the Jiva Prayatnam and Ishvara Anugraham comes together. The grace of the Lord, which is universal, it's not preferential. It is for everybody. No one is, preferred over the other. Nothing of the sort. Each one, if they deserve, they'll get it. It's available, but you need to deserve it. How will you deserve? With the proper attitude, if you do the right action, then you deserve it and the fruit will be given to you. That's all he's saying. So the sunshine, the breeze, the rain was for both. But one fellow was terribly attached for the growth of the olive tree. He was very much attached to the result of the action. As a result, his present action was impoverished. Therefore, he didn't get the result. Whereas the other fellow, other things remaining same, sunlight, breeze, rain. The other fellow, he surrendered. That's what it means when he says, I entrusted to its God my little tree. He who made it knew what it needed better than a man like me. We don't understand the bigger picture. When we talk from our limited angle. Bichara, ye ho gaya, ho gaya, chale gaya. From our angle we talk. Do we really understand the big picture? We don't. I think I mentioned this many, many years ago in this class. One of my, friends many years ago, his father had to go to another town in Tamil Nadu for work. And he thought his work will take 2-3 days to complete the work. So he had booked his return ticket in the bus to come back after 2 days. But his work got over the same day. So instead of staying in a hotel and all, he thought he'll come back. So he directly came to the bus station to see if there is any seat in one of the buses. But they were all full. So he requested one of the passengers to see if that fellow will be okay. Are you going on some urgency? If not, let me go back. You can, on your ticket, I'll go. You go another bus. Well, that fellow agreed apparently. Well, he was not in a hurry. He was just casually going somewhere. They got into the bus and the bus met with an accident. And then he lost his limbs or something like that. Now, the point is, the other fellow was supposed to go in the bus. Now, maybe some of his friends and relatives would say, why did you do this, man? Give a ticket to somebody else. How stupid you are. You should have gone in the bus. You don't know what you are doing. Maybe they said all that. But that fellow gave the ticket to this gentleman and this gentleman met with the accident. Instead of that fellow. Now, do we really understand? Can we understand all this? We cannot understand. It's not possible to understand. So therefore, we must surrender. We must understand that when we observe the world, everything seems to function meticulously. It's a beautiful cosmos and not a chaos. All are put in proper order. You know? So when you observe, you see that the vegetation, plants are more in number than herbivorous animals. Herbivorous animals are more in number than carnivorous animals. So who's designed all this? How beautifully the whole thing is taken care of. When you were conceived and you are in the mother's womb, the food reaches you when the mother eats. So, whoever designed it, whatever you want to call it, nature, divinity, whatever. So, things are working. So, you understand that bigger plan, bigger picture. You get that. And you understand that you are a very small, insignificant part of the whole. Don't think that you are something big. While at the same time, there is something that you need to do, which you have to do. So, it's not only doing it, it's also doing it with proper attitude. Both has to come together. Your attitude, your vision has to be something great, big. And you should have a correct attitude. And then you have to do the actions in the direction of the higher. Then you deserve. That's what he's saying. I entrusted to its God my little tree. And then a lot of people say, I prayed. Bhagavan will come and write the exam. Bhagavan will come and find a boy for my girl. Bhagavan will do. Bhagavan. What the Bhagavan? And same Bhagavan, so many people are giving a lot of work. They have their own desires to be fulfilled. So many things he has to do. To whom will he go or she will go? Therefore, we must understand that there is something that I need to do. I am part of the total. That I am a small, insignificant part, but there are certain things that I need to do. With humility, with right attitude, I just execute it. I need to water the plant, I'll water. I need to bring it out, expose it to sun for a while, I'll do that. Jo karna, I'll do. But I leave it. I relax and go to sleep. Yeah, I'm not every 2 minutes checking. What has happened? What has happened? What has happened? That means you are still there. You have not left it to God. That's what that American philosopher, Henry David Thoreau, few lines are saying. Whatever we leave to God, God does and blesses us. Leaving it to God means what? Not that you leave your actions to God. I will not go to exam. You come, like they show in some movies. Ganeshji is coming in your form and writing the exam. Nothing like that will happen. Ganeshji has so many other things to do. So whatever we leave to God, God does and blesses us. Means you leave the result to God. Result has to come if your actions are perfect. You take care of the action, attitude and your vision in life. The work we choose should be our own. God leaves alone. Meaning we have to do our bit. This is our obligation to do that. The result will be taken care of. You don't worry. You find that out, no? In the world everything is happening. As if you went and did, whether in the microcosm or in the macrocosm, whether in your own body or outside, who is doing all this? So many nerves and neurons are all connected for you to have these kind of experiences. How this is happening? Who is behind it? So therefore, you don't get into it more than what you are supposed to do. Leave that I aside and do the actions. The problem is we take the I and then we become too much involved. Then you don't deserve it. That's why he says, rely on him, no conditions. Because conditions means what? My mind. I hope it will happen. You better do. I've done too many pujas. 108 times I have come to your temple. You know. So many things I have fasted for so many days. Suppose that you hope you remember all that. That means what? You are putting conditions. Means you are tremendously attached to the result. Fix no ways and means. Jo bhi result hoga, I will accept. Means what? I'll accept doesn't mean then I'll remain without course correction. I'll accept means okay. Results nahi aaya. Means somewhere I have gone wrong. Somewhere I have gone wrong, so I'll check that and correct that. That's what it means. Acceptance doesn't mean it will not be followed up with the right action. You will assess, find out what went wrong, and then follow it up with right action. So fix no ways and means, so I wonder not my olive tree, whilst my olive tree did die. So, whatever work we do, we need to do it with this right attitude, surrendering to the total plan, doing what we are supposed to, and very clear in our head, we get what we deserve, not what we desire. So if I not got it means I don't deserve. Somewhere, something I've done. Some anxiety, something is there. I need to course correct myself. And when I deserve, nobody can stop me from getting it. Nobody can stop. This we need to understand. So he says, whatever we leave to God, God does. So leaving it to God means not bringing in our ego in between. Main kar raha hum. I am the doer. Mujhe sab pata hai. That kind of an attitude. That hankar should not come. Where there is ahankar, there is no God. And ahankar leaves, God fills it. That's what Jesus Christ said. Empty thyself, I shall fill thee. Empty thyself, I shall fill thee means empty the ahankar. And it will be filled with divinity. Your actions will become very light thereafter. The moment the ego, I am the doer, goes away, even the toughest task becomes very light. Methodi karma. You understand? But the problem is may. And the moment may comes, gone. That's all it is. So try to at least memorize these few lines. I entrusted to its God my little tree. He who made it knew what it needed better than a man like me. Laid eye on him, no conditions. Fixed no ways and means. This you try to memorize. Try to remember. And have that attitude in life. Then you relax. Simply you relax. There is fear, Oh my God. I'm going to go for an operation. What will happen? Anything can happen. You surrender. Whatever I have to do, I have to. But whatever is the result, I'll accept. That itself emboldens you, empowers you, encourages you to face the challenge cheerfully and face the results also cheerfully. So you will never be defeated. See, even though the results might not be as you expected, you still are not defeated. On the contrary, the other fellow, even though the results happened, he is still defeated. In the sense, he is worried, attached to the results that has happened. So he will lose it, the fellow. Therefore, he says, you will get what you deserve, not what you desire. This is the law of life. So, simply desiring, praying to God, thinking that God will come and fulfill the desire, then I will have to do nothing. If you have such attitude, please change it. Every now and then checking if, otherwise if God is not given, then we say, okay, this God is not powerful. So now I have to shift my loyalty to some other God. So from Lord Shiva, I move to Lord Vishnu. Then from Lord Vishnu, I move to Shakti. I keep on moving from one God to another or one religion to another. Not needed, all that is not needed. There are students who study in the ashram who have come from different faiths, from different parts of the world. So when I used to study in the ashram, I had a co-sadhak by name Andrew Oliver. He was from Australia. Unfortunately, he is no more. He died of brain tumor. He is just 2 years older to me. Very good boy. He went to Swamiji and said, Swamiji, I want to convert myself to Hinduism. Swamiji said, there is no such thing. You don't have to convert yourself to anything. You understand Vedanta, you will be a Vedantin and you will be a better Christian. You understand Vedanta, you will be a better human being. You will be following your religion in a better way. You don't have to convert. There is no such thing as conversion. You live this law, you are a Hindu. That's all. There is no such thing as conversion at all. So I was reminded of that. So there is nothing like that. Otherwise people keep moving from one God to another faith. Arey Baba, this God is useless. Uska power chale gaya. Kali Yuga mein uska power nahi. Pehla tha, abhi dusra God ko power aa gaya. So we have to go to that God. All these kinds of, I don't know where they get these ideas. So, they keep going from one to another. Instead of focusing on what they can do and they should do, changing the attitude and all that, this is what everybody is doing. So that's why he says, he who made it knew what it needed better than a man like me. Everybody gets results according to their karma, according to their actions. In fact, in Sanskrit, there is no equal word for the English word luck. What all we use a word is called adrishtam. What is adrishtam? Drishta means that which is seen. Adrishta means that which is not seen. That which is not seen means there is a reason which you do not know. And when the reason is not known, when the cause is not known, and the effect is positive, you call it luck. When the cause is not known and the effect is negative, you call it fate, destiny, accident. Just because you do not know the cause doesn't mean there is no cause. Everything is a cause-effect relationship in this universe. No effect can happen without a cause, and no cause will go without an effect. Take it or leave it. So, once we understand this, we will not worry about the result, kya ho rahe, kya chal rahe. We will plan, we will do everything. What happens is not in our hands. I remember in 2020 March, like every year we had organized Sumandaji's lecture. But suddenly this corona issue came up. Nobody understood what it was. Nobody knew, first of all, when they declared all this, close down and all that. Nobody knew that it was going to go for 2 years. Did we even imagine that we'll go for this long on online? Nobody knows, you understand. But we had planned well in advance, 6 months in advance, we had paid the advance and all that. And then we organized the lecture. But we couldn't because of corona. There are many things which is not in our hands. You keep doing what you have to do. Karmanye vadhikaraste, ma phaleshu kadachan. Ma karma phala yetur boho, ma te sangostva karmani. Your right is an action only, never to the fruit. So therefore do not get involved, do not get attached. Simply do what you have to do. With the proper attitude, of course. Simply do what you have to do doesn't mean with a careless attitude or selfish attitude. Attitude has to be good. Then it will enhance your actions. You will be able to do your actions positively without attachment, objectively you will be able to perform. And that will make you draw help from others also. Isn't it? Very interesting. Now, I don't know whether I mentioned this to you here. I will be lecturing in Lucknow from the 1st of September till 6th of September. We don't know anybody, hardly anybody we know in Lucknow. In fact, we'll just plunge because one gentleman was there. So, because of him, we thought we'll do something. But now, one of our colleagues have gone there to work for the event. Somebody has helped him to stay somewhere. And he's trying his best. We don't know how many people are going to come attend and all that. So in case you know anybody who you think can attend the lectures and benefit, then let us know. We will of course be putting it up in the group. You can forward it to them. But what I'm trying to say is, help does come. If you genuinely, with right attitude, you do. Swamiji talks about the 3 C's of success. Concentration, consistency, cooperative endeavor. Concentration and consistency you can do. You have to do. How will you get cooperative endeavor from others? How will you get cooperation from others? If you have cooperative endeavor. If you have the right attitude, then people will see that this fellow has a good attitude. Let us help him. Let us be part of that program. I want to also associate with it. It matters a lot. So, attitude matters. That's what he's talking about here. All the time his attitude is, give me rain, give me sunshine, give me this thing, give me that. So, yeah, he got, but it died. Because the result was something else. So, you think by getting all this, you'll get, this is what we are doing. We think we are safe. We're going on adding many things in our life. Instead of investing in the right place, we've got to invest our selves, park ourselves in the divinity, the truth within. Understand that the laws are maintained and governed by that divinity. And to that we surrender and we do what we have to. The big circle is there, small circle is there. Small circle is our individuality. Big circle is the divinity, the totality. So the small circle should align itself with the big circle and function. Mera tujhko arpan kya lage mera. With the attitude when you function, you will definitely deserve. That's all it is. Next topic. Desire veils the self.
Desire veils the self. Your self within is supreme. It is divine. You are the supreme self. The divinity in you is presently obscured by desires. Cast away, eradicate all your desires, you regain divinity. Human being minus desire equals God. Human being minus desire equals God. In the process of eliminating desires, you must ensure they do not reappear in another form. Desires cling to you. You may feel sure of having erased the desire, but it finds its way back in some other layer of your personality. Thus, you may have got rid of your passion for material wealth, only to slip into a passion for name or fame in the world. You drop 100 copper coins to pick up a silver coin. That will not bring you any nearer to Godhood. You unveil your divinity only when you have clean dropped all your desires, banished your selfish ego. You cannot do it in halves. You must give up the last grain of desire. There is no other way to it. That is the price you pay for regaining your divinity.
So this topic, desires veil the self. Our divinity, which is our original nature, is covered by desires, which is caused by the ignorance of our true nature. So we need to discover it. So it's not attaining, it is not attainment, it is attunement. By discovering the veil, we attune ourselves to the divinity within. So it says your self within is supreme, it is divine. You are the supreme self. The divinity in you is presently obscured by desires. Cast away, eradicate all your desires to regain divinity. So in simple formula, Swamiji gives, God plus desires equals human beings. Human beings minus desires equals God. So minus means we have to rise above desires. How do you rise above desires? By gaining knowledge and putting that knowledge into practice in Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. Then slowly, slowly you rise above. So he says in the process of eliminating desires, you must ensure that they do not appear in another form. The bigger problem is, you give up the desire for the lower things and you get attached to the higher. You know, you may leave your house and then go to an ashram and you get attached to the ashram or to the Swami there. You want to be an administrator in that ashram. You may develop that desire. You were the king. You resigned. You gave your kingdom to your children or somebody else. You went to the ashram, but there you want to become the administrator. So, do not get involved. The I, which manifests itself as I want, when the I has not understood its original nature, the I want will still linger. Isn't it? When I have understood that I am infinite, wanting will not be there. It's like when my stomach is full, hunger will not be there. When my stomach is not full, of course hunger will be. So as long as the true nature of the I is not understood, not realized, not discovered, the want will be there. So when you try to tame the mind, what the mind does is it starts acting funny. It appears as if it's given up something gross, but it gets attached to something subtle. So we have to be very careful there. Extremely careful. So that's why he says, desires cling to you. You may feel sure of having raised the desire, but it finds its way back in some other layer of your personality. So, at any cost, in any form, at any level, you've got to rise above all your wants and desires. And you have to clean drop it, not in halves. That is not enough. You move from, certain lifestyle. You've given up all those facilities and you move to another lifestyle. So certain desires have overcome. That is enough. No, you still remain away from divinity. You're still obscured by some other desires. So that's why he says, you unveil your divinity only when you have clean dropped all your desires. Banished your selfish ego. In some form or the other, your understanding is still that you are this Lakshmi Narayan, you are this little individual. And the want will be there. I do not want can also become a want. I want nothing. I will not take anything from anyone. That becomes a condition. If I take, I become agitated. You see, because at a certain level, the ego plays. I don't take from anybody. I don't take. The other is going on taking. But at the subtle level, you have given up taking. But the I is there, holding on to the not taking aspect. You know, so it's very dangerous how the ego functions. So therefore, he's saying, be careful. You think, you know, you've given up. But the I is still there, that I have given up. I have given up. I have given up. I. And that's at a very subtle level, it's catering to you. The want is still there. What a great renunciate is. What a great swami. Doesn't take anything. So that want is there. So in any form, it has to be eliminated. So he says, you cannot do it in half. You must give up the last grain of desire. There is no other way to it. That is the price you pay for regaining your divinity. See, when you love something very dearly, you will be ready to pay any price for it. Isn't it? And what you really love, if you actually see, is yourself. For that you will pay any price. Everything is so much dear to you because you love yourself so much. So the moment that is going to be a hindrance to you, then you will drop it. So you actually love yourself. You therefore need to understand the true nature of yourself. And as long as you have not understood that, you will be craving, you will be desired. So the more and more knowledge comes, the less and less wants, the less and less attachments. And then the less and less attachments, you will have right actions performed with right attitude. And then you will see many things getting attracted to you. You become the center where everything starts getting attracted to you. Easily you are able to perform with no desires. That's all he's saying. There is no other way to it. That is the price you pay for regaining your divinity. So therefore, you need to gain knowledge. So the next chapter he talks about is that wisdom. When we say knowledge means we mean wisdom, not just information. You need to gain the knowledge, convert that into wisdom. And that is alone going to help you to rise above this begging mentality, this craving mentality. See, as we go on cleaning our personality in this knowledge on a daily basis with proper reflection, slowly, slowly you will see we move from being beggars to givers. A complete transformation happens. That automatically happens because we are constantly allowing our personality to be cleansed with this knowledge. If you expose yourself to this knowledge consistently, this will happen. The next chapter, chapter 7, Light of Wisdom. The first topic is Veil of Ignorance. If you want to remove the ignorance, you have to gain wisdom. And see, the difference is there between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge you get from outside. Wisdom you get from your own effort. You have to reflect. You have to put in efforts. So knowledge is tuition. Wisdom is intuition. You understand? You need to put in efforts. Knowledge is in a way burden. Wisdom makes you light. You have the clarity. It sets the right direction in life. So he says, therefore, you need to gain that light of wisdom to rise above the desires which come from ignorance. Continue, please. Veil of ignorance. Amiji, are you there? Can you all hear me?
Veil of ignorance. There is but one reality, the Supreme God, the omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent Brahman, beyond the sphere of time, space and causation. Though all-pervading, God is located in the self within. Just as a government spread all over the country is located in its capital, the philosophy of Vedanta gradually instills the knowledge of the self, by which you transcend the limitations of your body, mind, intellect, and merge with your Supreme Self. You regain your infinite being. Ignorance
so,
of one reality.
One minute. So he says, first of all, the declaration of the Vedanta is Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya. So what is Satyam? Brahman. That alone is real. That is real. And he says, there is but one reality. Means what? What is the test of reality? What is the test for something being real? It should exist always at all times as the same. Exist in the past, exist in present, and continues to exist in future as the same. You test this, test anything in this world with reference to this concept, you will see that nothing stands this test except the consciousness, which was there illumining your past experiences, which is there illumining your present experience, which should continue to illuminate the future experience. So that consciousness is that reality, one reality. And that is what we call as the Supreme God in Vedanta, which is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. Omnipotent means all-powerful. Nothing can control it. And without it, nothing functions. Therefore, it is omnipotent. Omniscient means all-knowing. It is that which enlivens your body, mind, intellect. Therefore, it knows every function of your body, mind, intellect. It is sitting within you as a sakshi. It is all-knowing, omniscient. Then, omnipresent. It is that upon which this entire universe is superimposed. So it is present behind every aspect of this universe. It is all-pervading reality, Brahman. Brahman means Brahat Samatvat Iti Brahma, which means the big, infinite. Big means something that has no beginning or end. So he says it is beyond the sphere of time, space and causation. Time means time is eternal, space is all-pervading, causation is endless. And it is beyond the sphere of time, space and causation. Means it's beyond the sphere of this universe. This world, to take away time, space, causation, there is no world. So it is beyond world when he says it's beyond time, space, causation. Though all-pervading. So now this God, which is all-pervading reality, consciousness, how do I discover? So he says, since it is all-pervading, you need to locate it within you, not go out and try to locate it. Don't try to externally conquer it. This concept, trying to find divinity outside of you, will fail. So that's what he says, though all-pervading, God is located in the self within. And he gives an example. Just as a government spread all over the country is located in its capital. You got to locate, if you want to do any business with government, you have to go to the capital city. Though the government's law is there all over, isn't it? So So therefore, he says, the philosophy of Vedanta gradually instills the knowledge of the self, by which you transcend the limitation of your body, mind, intellect, merge with your supreme self. Now you slowly, slowly drop the identification with this body, mind, intellect. What is that identification doing to you now? Understanding that I am the body, I am the mind, I am the intellect. So when you gain the knowledge about yourself, you drop this saying that I am the body, I am the mind, I am the intellect. You will not say that I am the body, I am the mind, I am the intellect. And also you will not say that the body, mind, intellect belongs to me. Neither am I the body, mind, intellect, nor this body, mind, intellect belongs to me. When you go to that height. So he says, you regain your infinite being. You regain your original self. How? By gaining this knowledge. Continue.
Should I read further, Guruji?
Yes, please.
Ignorance of the one reality projects the pluralistic phenomena of the world. Just as the ignorance of a robe lying in the dark projects as illusory snake. It is the reality, Brahman alone, that appears to you as the universe. The creation of the universe, therefore, is brought about by the ignorance of your intrinsic primal nature. With the dawn of knowledge of your true self, the entire world folds back. You merge with the supreme, all-pervading reality.
So, what is Vedanta saying? There is only consciousness, but one reality. But our experience is, we are seeing the world. We are seeing this, you know, multitudinal beings existing, all experiences, everything we are going through. So he says, ignorance of one reality has projected the pluralistic phenomenon of the world. He explains by saying, just like how sometimes there is a rope lying on the ground, you can see it as a snake. He says, just as ignorance of a rope lying in the dark projects as illusory snake, it is the reality Brahman alone that appears to you as universe. So, the creation of the universe, therefore, is brought about by the ignorance of your intrinsic primal nature. See, this particular theory is talked about because when you talk about Brahman, Brahmatvat iti Brahma, means infinite, complete. Now, something infinite, complete can never have any lack within, any limitation. So when there is no limitation, everything is paripurna. What is there a requirement for it to create this universe? So when you say that God created this universe, see, we are experiencing this universe. So we ask this question, how did this world come about? Then we say, oh, okay. Just like the pots have been made by pot maker, this world has been made by world maker, God. God is the world maker. Now when you are a small child, you will accept all this. But as you grow, you say, hey, what do you mean world maker? World itself is infinite. Time is eternal. Space is all pervading. Causation is endless. Understand? Chicken produces egg, egg produces chicken. Seed produces tree, tree produces seeds. It goes on endlessly. So when these things are infinite, how can the infinite come from something finite? No, it has to come from infinite only. If it has come from infinite, could that infinite have a desire to produce as infinite? Because the pot maker has a desire to produce a pot in different shapes and forms and colors. Isn't it? So there is a desire. If the desire is there, that cannot be infinite. So if that is infinite, from which this infinity has come about, how it could have come about? So Vedanta says, just like how there is a rope lying which has not produced a snake, but due to our ignorance of the rope, in dark situation, environment, we may non-apprehend the rope and misapprehend it as snake. The interesting thing is the misapprehension or the misapprehended image should have similar qualities of the non-apprehended reality. The rope is 4 feet long, 3 inches thick, black in color, coil. Snake is 4 feet long, black in color, 3 inches thick, coil. You cannot non-apprehend the rope and misapprehend it as boulder or an elephant. You cannot non-apprehend a boulder and misunderstand it as a snake. If you non-apprehend a boulder, you have to understand, you will probably misunderstand it as an elephant. Because the qualities have to be similar. So what Vedanta is saying is, see the world. It is made up of time, space, causation. Time is eternal. When did time begin? You cannot answer. Where does the space actually start? You cannot answer. Where actually the causation started? You cannot. Did the egg come from tea or chicken come first? You can't answer that. So it's endless. So, but the qualities are what? Eternal, all pervading, endless. So therefore Vedanta says, the cause that you are talking about, when you say God or Brahman in Sanskrit, it has to be something which is infinite, which should have had no desire to create. So, in the very existence of that reality, infinity, the potential of not understanding that reality exists. And the conducive time, you are non-apprehending it and misapprehending it as snake. That's all. You are non-apprehending it and misapprehending it as the world. That is the theory given by Vedanta. So he says, the creation of the universe therefore is brought about by the ignorance of your intrinsic primal nature. With the dawn of the knowledge of your true self, the entire world folds back. What is this entire world? This entire world is nothing but Nama Rupa. Everything folds back. Purnamada, Purnamidam, Purna, Purnamudachyate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnameva Avashishyate. Every day after the class, we chant this. Purnamada, that is infinite. Purnamidam, this is infinite. This world is infinite. Purna, Purnamudachyate. From that infinite, this infinite has come about. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate. From the infinite, if you remove this infinite, what remains is infinite. What is this removing this infinite? This infinite means the projected names and forms. The projected names and forms, how do you remove? By understanding that they are actually nothing but ocean only. Big wave, small wave, agitated wave, calm wave. All these waves are what? Nothing but ocean. So in the knowledge of the ocean, the big and small and agitated and calm waves that are projected upon the ocean is negated through the knowledge. When with this knowledge you negate that, what remains is ocean. Similarly, the red pot, blue pot, big pot, small pot, all these are negated with the knowledge of the clay. The knowledge of the clay, you negate the Nama Rupa. So with the dawn of knowledge of your true self, the entire world folds back. What is this folding back business? That's what I'm explaining. Folding back means, oh, okay, okay. Suddenly one day, everything will be not there. I won't see anything. No, you will still see. Otherwise, you need to go to mental asylum. It's not that all the jnanis are not seeing the world. Nama Rupa, they understand, is nothing but Brahman. But we don't understand it like that. That's the problem. That is the farak. That is the difference. He says, with the dawn of the knowledge of your true self, the entire world folds back. You merge with the supreme, all-pervading reality. You thereafter become one with the supreme reality. We'll continue next week. Let's conclude now. Om. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti. Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Udhyatmana Va Prakriti Swabhavat Karomi Adyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Yeti Samarpayami. Hari Om.